totally on his mind. And Justin knows James Hall quite well through a recent commission for the Sandy Space project, which is a huge and very large installation in Abercrombie 3, which some of you may or may not have been to, but we might talk about this later. And then just to introduce Paul and James, they've been working together since 2005 at NTSET. And I'll just read a little intro out here. Born from a culture of bass and techno music on the Bristol club scene, NTSET's auditory aesthetic pairs down electronic music with elemental structure. And I was in touch with Paul several months ago to ask NTSET if they would make a work, or show a work actually here tonight as part of the performing architecture programme. And they responded to this by saying, well, we'd like to create a new work and travel up to North Wales and film and record in a decommissioned station, a power station. So if you haven't seen that, then go and see it later on, and you can feel it rumbling up through the floorboards as we speak. But I'll hand over.
Thank you, Maria. Yeah, it's particularly nice to be here and feel something slowly reverberating from us all, particularly you that sat directly on the floor. This evening is a nice thing to have to people that came to. So, first off, I think it probably makes sense to, I'm sure of many of your colleagues, I've very been to set and looking at the work before, but maybe as a bit of background, it makes sense to. It's a particularly interesting project that combines Paul and James have come up to speed and come up to resolving work from two quite different angles, actually, and it's somewhere between those fissures that the magic happens. And maybe it makes a bit of sense if you guys wanted to talk about the genesis of NTSET maybe before we go on to talk about the work tonight.
Yeah. Well, as Mary mentioned, we started the project in 2005, and it was, I was just working at the Walker as well, I was studying architecture previously, and I moved back to Bristol to work at Gallery from being this place there. And I was doing a cultural residency at the time, and the simultaneous had all the arrangements to come out of music and the lineage of kind of both minimalism and the music simultaneous. During that time, I met James, who was running a studio in Rome, which was in the electronic music community in the city at the time. And through kind of mutual ongoing conversations and both crossover interests being kind of literature, architecture, design, music, sonic art, we decided to kind of form a project together and kind of unify these ideas together. And it's been, so that started in 2005, it's been a consistent journey since then, expanding and like just pushing grammar forward, what we think can be a possible relationship between physical space, physical presence of sound, design of structure and material, and also some potential thinking voices and narrative storytelling. And so ultimately I think the project over the space of I think 8 years moved towards a kind of junction of these ideas for us.
And I guess through that process, I think it's fair to say probably that the work was born out of it was born out, as Mario kind of mentioned, a kind of a hard context. I think that's the idea of this is fair to say.
I think it's more offensive if you're out of frustration of the context than if you're out of the context.
Yeah.
I think both of us kind of arrived at a point where in kind of London history as a kind of light bulb kind of environment, it's quite from a point to one national thing. It's really the practitioner of the same sort of moment. I think what we wanted to look at was how we could take this sort of really visceral quality or the immersive quality of that kind of environment, so that kind of experience, and transpose that into other experiences, other environments, maybe in other formats.
So I think we very much wanted to use this idea of taking a very analytical approach to what we said. So I think from the start we're always working towards using the fundamental building blocks of sound, so sideways and white noise, and using these more in a way that was, I guess, from an architecture background, James, and the kind of solid design background. So how do we take these fundamental elements and how do we push them to their maximum potential, but ultimately looking at hardware analog processes fundamentally and seeing how you can impose the impression of the analog machinery onto the fundamental basic elements. So that being even that's the process that we started, I think, in
I think what we saw in hearing your experimenting, we kind of pushed the public format of music to a certain point where it just felt like we hit a ball or it was dead. Wasn't really anything that's been interesting in for us to keep on pushing to across the repeating the same sort of ideas or approaches over again. So I think as we started to play with more elements or forms of sound, we noticed that what we would hear wasn't so much the sound itself, but it would give us an impression of the processes that we were running the sounds through. And the more we kind of explored that territory, we kind of became more and more interested in the idea that by pushing the equipment beyond small operating kind of thresholds, you started hearing things go really beyond your ability to kind of contrive or construct. That you were hearing like mechanical processes that were kind of beyond maybe even sort of synthesis somehow. They weren't things to build up from ones and zeros or you could necessarily you could kind of be part of the design, you can design it, let's say. And I think that opened up a huge kind of territory for us in terms of directions that we go or things to explore. And I think quite naturally as an animation that led us to working with spaces themselves.
So that might be a good comment to that meeting, perhaps.
It might. So what you see downstairs, and just run underneath us, is that it's a slightly longer project, I think it's fair to say, that was kickstarted and managed by the Apple Media, which was released, what are we talking, 2 years ago now?
Possibly, yeah.
Almost, yeah. Yeah. Media itself has brought Wayne and James and Sean Farmore. Detail and more than I can was a record that was shot, in Worcester Mansions in South Gloucestershire. Very much kind of building became kind of like a satchel third member, I think it's fair to say, of the duo. And it kickstarted a kind of process of seeking out spaces that could almost act as this phantom revolving kind of cast of characters that I guess you guys collaborate with, work with, record together, and see what happens. I'll leave you kind of to sort of elaborate a bit further, but what you see at the end here is actually maybe the fourth or fifth interaction with such a space, I think it's fair to say, but do tell us the story of Media and how it sort of got started.
Okay, well, it was during the production of our second studio album. In 2010, we were essentially, of course you spend a lot of time in the studio, essentially two people in a room and locked in a very intentional production process. And I think on an actual just trip away, we visited a site called Worcester Mansion in Gloucestershire, which is an unfinished remnant of Gothic Revival. So it's the largest example of residential Gothic architecture in the country. And it's this immense mansion that was never completed. So the structure itself has stairways that lead into nowhere and mantelpieces like in space and incomplete rooms. And interconnected chambers. So, as a structure, it had a very good unique property to it.
You're kind of visualizing an Asher
section. Absolutely. It has absolutely that quality to it. And I think it was, the space so inspired us that we decided that simultaneously we wanted to develop a project around that and that responded to this concept, but simultaneously had that narrative quality of allowing the space itself to become very much a character within the production process. So, it led us to kind of build to the rose skeleton structures that we took into the mansion, along with recording equipment and the sound system, and use that to essentially allow the space to add texture, detail, and kind of directly interact with the sound in a way that's very much about translating space directly into the sound.
Yeah, I think a lot of the ideas behind that came from building a studio in Bristol and watching the way that the musicians interacting with the space you had. You built in a Whereas, in the case of shopping for that, the property, if we were able to create a process by which you could, instead of trying to identify the needs of the space, say, content, we could actually use that as a kind of creative tool. And kind of adding to that was the idea that we could use already within the camera processes of using white noise as a means of creating a kind of cast or impression of space. So one of the properties of white noise is that for any given inhabitant, it has an equal distribution of power. So if you're playing through space and record the results, whatever change in it would be an impression of space, because inevitably it would never come back to you as a total distribution. So between use of white noise and these other techniques, including the capture of reverberance of space, you
have to
feel like you're getting it.
Yeah, there's definitely an idea of how to almost actually turn into space and have you arrive at space and actually capture its fundamental essence. I'm not looking at, I think the casting analogy definitely does make a lot of sense. It's very literally that process of saying, approaching sound as a liquid that can flow across this interconnected space and then capture what its fundamental essence.
Rachel Wagner does noise.
But I've always also thought about this sequence, I think, in terms of my portraiture, basically. I think when we were having early conversations about a project that we did together at P3, it was very much kind of this idea that actually through those sonic processes, what you really get is a portrait of the building itself, the imprinting of the space of set and almost reverberations and refractions. But it's almost like a double-edged portraiture, in a way you're also kind of making portraits of the hardware that you're also using. By pushing them at least a purist really about the sounds that you use, by sticking exclusively maybe to a white noise and a sound like that. So you've kind of basically got chaos there through white noise and the closest you can get to purity through a sound like. You're kind of playing with balances of how to basically create this portrait, both of the technology maybe that creates this, but also of the space. And somewhere between those two things seems to be why the work sits.
Yeah, I think the interesting question is there a kind of like living essence that you still from the spaces? Beyond just the idea of creating a representational object. While it's inevitable that you're kind of capturing something of the literal structure of the space, I think, maybe the more creative process than that sort of teasing out, using those sorts of teas out without feeling, if not just something maybe beyond just the structural aspects of the environment.
So that was Neil's first investigation to see how we could take a very standardized, fixed, formalized studio process and make it more dynamic, more responsive to architecture, essentially. And I guess that process is what led us to arrive at producing this film that we presented tonight.
And maybe you can briefly just mention some of the other spaces that you guys have been interacting with essentially on the way to get sort of where we are tonight.
Well, obviously we did the Institute of the Foundation, which was presented last December,
yeah.
I think. So that was
probably not the most festive of occasions.
That wasn't particularly festive. It was a large concrete bunker that's underneath Baker Street, and it's part of the University of Westminster, and it was formerly part of the architecture of this civil engineering department, so it was used to test sections of the Channel Tunnel and Spaghetti Tunnel and large and motorway sections. And I actually studied architecture in that building, and it was always amazing to find that space. And just in the process, the above project, and it seemed like the right context for us to respond to. But it was particularly cavernous and amazingly reverberant. And equally, as a context to just slip off from the central London into this quite unique kind of testing ground. Seemed like an amazing place to generate installation around.
And I think what I was really interested in and excited about that project as well is, in a way, it's kind of really attempt to make sound sculpture, I think it's fair to say. Kind of maybe first time, I guess most of these processes like downstairs, like with Manchester Mansion, kind of behind closed doors. It's almost like some kind of remote lab of that studio process you guys were talking about earlier. There's a really interesting distance that happens when that's taken somewhere else and you start embodying those physical characteristics. But I guess at that time, we were actually letting people inside that, and it was, yeah, its physicality was quite overwhelming, and that's what felt really successful. It was kind of, you could almost feel the shape of the sound existing then within the bricks and mortar concrete as well. But maybe you can talk more about the project downstairs that's on the show tonight. I mean, it's interesting, it's a very, very neat turnaround where we start this process and the process of conversation in Winchester Mansion, which was never finished. And of course, what we've got downstairs is frequently a Basil Spence designed nuclear power station. Actually, it was built in 1965. Basil Spence, that the architects around here, you probably know better as the architect of Coventry Cathedral, which I think was built 3 years before. Actually, as well, in terms of double circuit function. And I believe that nuclear power station was switched off in 1991, is that right? And it now essentially exists in limbo until 2083. So the way we're just imagining that are finished, we're actually being downstairs to something that's in existent limbo. Its life is essentially over, it's kind of purgatory until it knows what's going to happen. So maybe you can talk more about the process of piecing together what's happening downstairs.
You know, it's an interesting place to arrive at working before we've done the installation, people doing the recording in some mines in the southeast London, which of course, which were basically ancient buildings and charcoal mines. And I think having come from that, doing the work in Ambika, which seems to be two different stages of kind of, say, industrialization or a huge span of time, it was really interesting to kind of. This, the carbon house has been running for quite a few times on our way to New York to think about what would it be like to kind of sort of go into a further kind of iteration, further step of the industrial process, or back in America, but also sort of simultaneously looking at this, as Justin was saying, looking at the kind of architecture or space of the new beyond function, which would ask very different set of questions in which was mentioned before.
Yeah, so I think as an insight for us actually to visit a nuclear power station and kind of learning about the not only the kind of pure industrial scale and kind of the depths of human endeavor in terms of just splitting the atom. This thing had not to be kind of overcome about it, but it was like the actually from an architectural kind of just a building management issue, actually, the seeing the space is kind of, you know, perhaps sense arguably, you know, from the world of British post-war British architecture. Built with these sort of very pure concrete blocks in the middle of Snowdonia National Park. And it was operational as a nuclear power station for 26 years. And I think when it was switched off, it has the life part of the building continues for another 100 years. But there'll be people on the site, there'll be, you know, the gradual deconstruction of the structure, but ultimately the core, the essence of what this thing is, the reactor is kind of left. So it's you know, the process of fascinating context, this building that had the design of the project and then on to build that.
Yeah, I think it kind of raises an interesting question about the boundaries between like architecture and structure. And I think, you know, for us it seems kind of strictly down to function. And then we thought perhaps there was a way of approaching an architecture that would be down to function and seeing kind of everything as a kind of sculptural process, so we can see maybe civilization itself within it kind of risen out of the sculptural process, rather necessarily focusing on it as a, I think we have a tendency to focus on these sort of things as kind of evidence of some kind of decay or, you know, a kind of black mark on society or a human endeavor.
Or kind of early dating.
Yeah, early dating is a good thing, you know. Whereas it seems much more interesting than starting to kind of not approach it or even a sort of didactic frame of mind or an even critical frame of mind and look at it as an experience, you know, try to engage with it as an experience of social rather than as an experience of history.
So I think it was financially, I think one of the decisions we played in terms of creating a kind of a visual response to what's essentially a performance that took place in this space at a particular moment in time. I think one of the difficulties was when we, it was and is a very beautiful building and designed in a high point in the British coastal modernism and fulfills all of the, you know, the desires that we imagined that era of opportunity to be. And I think the difference when we went in there and filmed it, it looked precisely like that. It was this beautiful kind of modernist vast structure. And I think it was we had to make a choice about what we wanted to kind of visually represent the performance as being just purely representational. Here is the space, here is the sound that's placed in that space. Or alternatively to look at a way of using the kind of visual content to generate the sound to kind of create more an object that existed in its own right.
I mean, it's difficult not to see kind of the parallels, I guess, Snowdonia almost with the white lights and this kind of temple of brutalism and the middle of it and the power of the kind of sign lights that you guys are working with as well. I mean, I wonder if you have the option to bring people into the space to experience it as a live performance, which for God knows how many health and safety reasons I imagine you probably don't have. Would you like that? Would you like the fact that you're having this kind of solo personal relationship with the space and able to have this more intimate dialogue to create effort?
Yeah, definitely it's about intimacy or personal dialogue. I think it's, I think in a way if you're trying to create some well, representation, that may be a consideration. But I think if you're trying to bring back some kind of essential quality or feeling of the place out, I think when we were looking at sort of images that we felt about building, I think we felt that they maybe have some celebratory. The communicating something that's a little bit of thing. And I guess pop can use the word beautiful, which is an interesting, very interesting choice of words when you're approaching it. But it's kind of like this beautiful structure, it's a very beautiful kind of landscape. And I think one of the things about that dynamic of being within that landscape seems to be a very difficult thing to tell whether the landscape contains a power plant or the power plant just contains the landscape. Sometimes, like the virtue of being imprisoned or at least defined it so that it isn't something that happens there. I don't think that somehow the experience of being within the actor chamber or in the building for an audience somehow communicates something of that, of the entire kind of essence or like mode of the place.
Well, yeah, I'm not missing the same as the idea that I think if you want to learn about what you react to this like, or if you want to see what the architecture of the house is going to do, the house is going to like, there's so many resources that people can get engaged with that. And you can go, you know, in a way, it was our responsibility to portray or seduce the audience to seeing this incredible building. Yeah. Because there are already resources out there that allow that to happen. So I think it felt more responsibility from our position to actually create something that felt like it.
A product of that kind of history of how systems work, systems art, I guess, that we're familiar with and too. For me, I've always found it interesting as well as kind of seeing these within history most of the City Symphony film, which kind of was this explosion of your filmmaking when people were starting to first invest in technology cameras, typically around kind of 20s across the world, being very excited as the city was becoming a force of its own right, creating kind of odes to the majesty of what it was to live in an urban space. In a way, those kind of histories of City Symphony, in a way, this catalog work is almost like building concertos or something. It's like you kind of got the same thing. I mean, in a way, I don't know if anyone saw the William Klein exhibition through City of St. Modern, but it opens with this beautiful Broadway by Lights, which is a great abstraction of the lights of downtown Broadway, Times Square, or something, and this kaleidoscopic kind of way. And in a way, kind of much of that language is quite present in the film downstairs as well, too, I think. With the added complication of the fact that the imagery itself is actually quite generated from the sounds to create this kind of holistic kind of time frame about the space. So maybe you can talk about the relationship between the sound and the image. Because I, from my understanding, it's the first time maybe that visuals, that a piece has been composed of visuals and audio as equal, with equal responsibility to one another, maybe? It takes on a history of some of the other video works that you may have seen. seen kind of around things like collapse, that recently people are asking about, and kind of takes it into a more symbiotic relationship. So maybe as well.
Yeah, well, you're definitely right about, I think the whole issue of sense is very much inspired by that. That image, the structural film and video that emerged, I think, brings it out with kind of sexual art, and letting the UK feel like the London Comics Co-op. And the groups were very much inspired by the pure processes of film and video. And I think we worked with Fendel and Sam Williams, who are. I did play a lot of work on the board as well. We did a lot of work around and on the TV sets, transmission feedback. And so essentially it was a way of us taking these fragments of footage and these kind of moments of our experience within the Bachelor Centre building to work with play and Sam, how we kind of construct this is almost a kind of practical of that moment of the experiences and kind of built on the almost felt like a dynamic relationship between Sam and English.
Well, it's kind of fractal, but it's also a little bit spectral as well, I think it's fair to say. When I was watching the film for the first time this afternoon, I found myself writing down Managing Pike shoots a horror movie. Or Tony Carras take a film to meet the Twilight Zone. It's kind of this interesting moment between that. I think it's quite...
It's only horror, definitely.
And it's also something, I mean, I guess there's also this well, between that kind of filmmaking, this idea of decay, and the actual call today of hearing about sex as well. I mean, with this discussion about collaboration between the key to finding a signature for something, in itself, that's a form of kind of decay of entropy, kind of mapping that until it disappears, which I guess is what's happening with the building as well, in terms of mapping this point of time before it too disappears.
What would be around?
No.
I mean, you also have a much longer part of the actual training process itself.
Yeah.
People can like something.
Kind of a labor, do you know?
Yeah, that's all.
But maybe it's. We have a running mic, so that does mean there's a possibility for the next question. Should anyone want to start shipping in? Raise your hand, wave, or we'll just keep gasping until the end of the time. So I guess maybe another thing to talk about is you mentioned kind of TV static. And I think if you look at the work downstairs, it's very obviously analog. And very tactile because of that as well. And I wonder if that's a conscious decision to kind of like outside HD, is that a position that you guys are taking? Or is that more a kind of dialogue with the students? Or where does that position come from?
I mean, I think we just want to call it the visual noise, representation, translation of white noises and parts of music at the same time. There's also the idea that you know, the white noise you see on TV or white noise you see on radio is part of at least the signal from the Big Bang. So it's kind of like the material contains lots of differences in it. But I think for us, you know, there's kind of a few layers or maybe even scales and areas that we're looking at these projects. One is the kind of immediacy of the situation you're building as a kind of pure example. Also, at what point in the kind of like a ongoing process that you're dealing with that? You know, and this kind of brings an idea to recursion in terms of maybe kind of human coming to these buildings. So, in the same way, like cathedrals within the context of people, you have the idea that there's kind of a microcosm of the universe contained in it. I think you're looking at potential of any architecture to contain that. And sort of reconstitute a building, to re-understand the building with the material that contains with it, the sort of abstraction of a sea of our own, yeah, our own physical kind of universe and our physical space. Sort of part of it is like the underlying origins of all of these processes.
And I guess I'm intrigued too. What's interesting about the Intersect project is it exists in different guises, right? Or different, as much as kind of the scientific processes are being transferred to different spaces, in a lot of ways you guys as a duo are being asked to respond and react to very different spaces too. I mean, what Tuesday you're playing, Tuesday you guys were playing Berlin, and Berlin, which if anyone hasn't been there before, it's an enormous ex-industrial power. Harbour Station, again, actually, that's converted into one of the probably most important spaces for the music at the moment. So that was, I guess, very much in a club context, really easily asked to respond to. Downstairs we're in a James Sterling design auditorium in Harbour. Early before Christmas, you were playing to yourselves essentially in an abandoned nuclear reactor. I guess my question that I'm interested in as well is whether these processes of playing spaces within the projects themselves start to affect your live performance as well, and if that process essentially responding to the room is something that you can do kind of on a swift and efficient play at club, or maybe a more classical auditorium, and I know you guys play theatre as well, these kind of things. How does that play into, or where's the line?
Well, I think it's an inevitability that, like playing in a particular space, you're not actually hearing the music, you're hearing how the space in the air responds to what's coming out of the air. I think there's an interesting illusion that happens in these situations, how they address this one, which is that there's a relationship between what's called the performer and your experience. As soon as there's kind of mediation, you're engaged with the air, you're not engaged with what's, you know, feeding into the air. So I think there is, it's not works for advantages of those works against us. Certain spaces, for whatever reason, certain moments communicate something quite powerful, a lot of times you turn up some place and it doesn't quite have the same weight, the same power that it's doing, kind of beyond our control, but it does, it's in a way very much highlights the primacy of the environment over maybe even the composition.
Well, I think Tim was saying something that there's a subtext to that question, which is very much about the kind of convergence or potential convergence between different types of spaces, you know, contemporary art institutions, academic spaces. So what is the possibilities of conversation that could exist through kind of the creative production that could cross those types of ends? I think we're very lucky in the way that, or very grateful that we've given the opportunity to kind of explore both kind of architectural contexts, kind of visual art, kind of art spaces, art performance spaces. And I think it's part of, you know, what I'd like to see, you know, the wider conversation that exists between those worlds. So I think at the moment they feel very, and this is a situation that maybe wasn't the case in the kind of 70s. I think the idea that kind of music was compartmentalised, you know, I think it was very much kind of presented as one of the kind of visual art.
It was part of that same cultural experiment.
Absolutely.
If you see it back kind of what people were doing around radio, some of those guys in Berlin in the 70s, and everything else was pretty part of that joint conversation about what can we do with technology to move the cultural conversation forward a little bit. I think it's true that that's happening a little bit.
And then we've seen that through the vertical ideas like London media and kind of the governmental instrumentalization of the digital culture.
Yeah.
The technology that is going to use it, so that kind of work.
Yeah.
Sidelined into a separate sphere.
Yeah.
I think there's a value in reincorporating and reconnecting those communities together in a way that has an integrity.
Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, I think it's fair to say, Paul and I actually know how to dance a lot. And I think it's always interesting for kind of these, for these, I've always been really interested in how why this world is taking that, why it is there are these efficient tools between them. And why many people tend to get to us? And there aren't many people, there aren't many people who are welcomed into institutions like this, I guess. I mean, you have many people our age, like Ethan, maybe, Pastor Nikolai, and then slowly it kind of trails off and becomes this kind of abstract electronics dialogue that doesn't really, isn't allowing to make to respond to what's happening within a final contact.
Yes, it's letting them away, the end of last year, when we were to learn and discussing it as well as those. And I think it was, I think his work has been particularly influential in the way that a conversation between contemporary art and experimental electronic music could coexist. And it could be presented in a way that was very succinct and very, very precise. And he described those two worlds like, in a way that embrace and agility. You know,
and it's kind of organic as well.
Yeah.
So during that conversation, so that's sort of the monetization of the media assets.
So something works with that wider conversation, like why is it that there are only selected people who seem to get to contribute to that sphere?
And why do the people get out of that sense? But I digress. Does anyone have any questions? Does anyone want to chip in with anything?
I also thought you talked all the time about artificial engineering sound working in a built environment. Have you ever explored and the sound that coming back to you? And thinking, have you ever explored how that sound could get lost in a dialogue with kind of a natural environment or things like that? I don't know if you know what I mean.
So could that be your
I was imagining, let's say, an auditory village with lots of small houses and sound traveling through a big environment, but not going back to you, but going away, just traveling.
Yeah. Well, we actually did a series of sound recordings, I think, last year in an old chalkboard that was underneath Kent, which is where I was mines. And it was like a 22-mile desert tunnel underground. And that was very much about a base signal just spreading out throughout the 22-mile tunnel network. And I think even if I was going there, it was very much like hearing the type of sounds that you only hear on the science fiction film in the theatre. It was that kind of hyper-real sonics that don't exist in real space otherwise. But I think that to us, that dissemination of the signal through structure is definitely something that we're really able to explore.
If anyone's not been to Chiselhurst Caves before, I recommend a trip. You can get there and walk there. 30 minutes from London Bridge. And you get there dragged by an old man who's been looking after space for some time with gas lights, and there was some say will bang on a piece of metal. It will probably give you an experience not quite as intense as rumbling into a silo across 22 miles, but pretty amazing. Is that a question?
My question is probably slightly technical and geared towards the fact that you said about constituting sound in terms of big scenes of what noise and sound is. So something I'm really excited about your sound is that they've obviously come together to be much more technology property in what you create based on those simple elements. For me, a lot of that is in the modulation of these sounds and relationships. They're tapping into the natural evolved pathways that I've got for interpreting sounds of the same nature, the ball falls, it has a particular predictable acoustic. Things that happen in my natural world that has predictable characteristics, just like buildings do. So if I see a black wall, then there's a sort of gap over the doorway. There's a lighting that's dark. There's an inevitable contrast between this, the edge of the building or the line of the building. Even this happening in nature as well, the ground has to jump to the tree. But we said, why don't you understand these things? What we need to capture with your sound. So when I watched Collapse, I got very excited about when we get the services. Really, my question boils down to is that a purposeful thing? Do you aim to have a relationship between spectral and temporal content of the sound so it's very natural? You hear some songs and basically interact with it in trouble. So it doesn't feel very natural. Your sound is very natural. Is that meant to be? How do you get the wireless to come out back and fix so the sound like impact?
I think I'm following the textural aspect of our approach, and the other major dimension is maybe a causal aspect of the investigation of structural investigation. So I think in terms of the way we structure music or we approach rhythm, over the years it's evolved towards I think first we're really looking at sort of like algorithmic approaches to structuring pieces. I think we've tried to move another step beyond that, maybe liquefying the idea of time signature, of tempo entirely, and trying to create a kind of causality of predictable events. Perhaps contain something other than electronic music, maybe what you're familiar with electronic music. And that's kind of, I guess, guess, dissolving even further the kind of maybe origins in more rigidly structured electronic music can come from. And I think maybe the inevitability of that, the inevitable result of that is a sense of perhaps some feeling organic or maybe alien, maybe it's maybe not best for me, having a sense of how big they are.
My question has to do with the Czech money, but also something that you mentioned earlier about the Iran and the energy and how this energy is slowly getting this risen. In a way, I wanted to know whether you have recorded in the cave, whether you actually want to record the sound as it was getting into different spaces within the mine, and then you were able to play the sound back and see how the space responded and was able to take away some of the power from your sound gas, whether that is something that is the university or
the and every space of tensors set frequencies. In fact, when things are mined, we're actually attempting to make a much larger piece out of the environment. That's just a burden because it has such a long decay and reverberation. Everything played into it would tend towards the same thing. So over the course of the 6 minute piece, we have very much sense of wrestling in that space in which we're returning to sort of fundamental frequencies. Maybe that represents the space physically, but the kind of great possibility of someone limited by the fact that no matter what you do, you're making the same day
over
and over and over.
No matter where you were in the
movie. Yeah. Maybe slightly different sonic characteristics, might have a sense of sound approaching rather than being immersed in it, but fundamentally the same.
Unless anyone's got any super burning questions, it's wrapping up sort of. So, Clive, I guess I've got one question for you guys together. It's with, the Octoset project very definitely started with Sonic Roots. It seems like it's about to become its levels of complexity have increased, I guess, as it goes forward. And a number of us are so much about that, maybe I've taken putting the character on record, it's kind of coming more to experiential, ultimately. And I'm just wondering whether you still see Octoset as a Sonic project, and will it always be a Sonic project, or where are you guys sort of showing yourself in that sort of moment? That's probably a horrible question.
No, that's important. I think it's at least very important, I think it's, often the project is a relationship between people, and conversation about ideas, and academic and direct relations as well. So I think it's like, up to this point, of course, sounds really fundamental mode of our communication as a project, that's fair. But I think as we explore further, as we discuss, we've met, connected to ideas and structure from the video, moving image, photography, through a lot of the design and art for the albums we've done. So I think it's, I think ultimately it's, I'm being very impressed for what kind of the art is. I think we're definitely going to be looking at exploring these kinds of new media, over the next year, definitely.
Well, as a shameless plug, as Robbie mentioned, the next events in the collaboration we have at Sandy Space with the Architecture Foundation, we'll be two more events, maybe three before the summer. First of all, John Bosa from Touch, that will be coming in March. Details to be soon. And probably in summer we will also have Electron Miami based at the Dallas Party again to kind of look at some of the other bad luck. For you guys, coming up next, there's opportunities for an embryonic release. Is it fair to say, what's up next for you guys?
There's release, there's more material that comes out in February. And that's the sessions of recording we made in the power station that's presented tonight. And then Exception of the Cave, recording took place in December, and then that's the record.
Well, I'd like to thank Paul and James and wish you all the best.